Good afternoon, everyone. Joint Legislative Audit Committee will come to order. First order of business is to call the roll.
Senator Coles. Here. Representative Kirkman.
Here.
Senator Darling. Senator Lozick.
Here.
Senator Beinhout.
Here.
Senator Bewley.
Here.
Representative Mako.
Here.
Representative Nygren. Representative Sargent.
Here.
Representative Brousseau.
Okay, the roll will remain open for the remaining members. We've got a couple items on the agenda today. We're going to take up the public hearing and audit report 14-15, initial claims processing for unemployment insurance, and an agency follow-up on the report, and then we'll be taking up the public hearing executive session on the three proposed audits. If there's anybody that's interested in testifying on the audit, please fill out hearing slips. They should be over here. And obviously, there's written materials also down this hallway that on the audits that are under consideration. I don't have any introductory remarks on the audit. Sam, do you have anything?
Well, I'm just pleased that we're here today. It's been about 15 months since this audit's been asked for, and the product's been out for a few months to obviously look at the data so we can have a complete year look back at where the UI complaint call lines have been. And I am just grateful that the information, I know it's generated other issues that have come up, so I can't wait to hear the testimony today from the department, and I look forward to hearing from our state auditor to give an overview.
Okay. Joe, Chrisman, and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Coles, Co-Chair Kirkman, committee members. My name is Joe Chrisman. I am the State Auditor and Director of the Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau. Our pleasure to be with you today to discuss the findings related to Report 1415. For those committee members, this is found behind tab D, as in dog, in your packet. So the first item underneath this section will be just to walk through and present the findings from the audit. And to do so, I'd like to introduce Dean Swenson, Program Evaluation Director, who will walk through those findings.
Hi, Dean.
Hi, good afternoon. So the unemployment insurance program is managed by DWD. Individuals file initial claims for unemployment benefits through an automated telephone system, online, or by contacting one of DWD's two call centers. Through fiscal year 2013-14, individuals who attempted to file initial claims through the telephone system or online were unable to complete their claims using those systems if they reported having worked outside of Wisconsin, or if they reported having worked for multiple employers and at least one of those employers' information was not in DWD's computer systems. And those individuals were then required to contact DWD's call centers to complete their initial claims. In fiscal 2013-14, 18.3% of initial claims started through the automated telephone system were completed by that method, and 55.4% of initial claims started online were completed online. Through fiscal year 2013-14, individuals could contact the call centers through three telephone lines, including a line intended for individuals filing initial claims. Individuals were placed on hold in a telephone queue when all call center staff were busy. If more calls were received than available spots in a queue, some calls were blocked. So in fiscal 2013-14, almost 1.7 million calls to the call centers, or 62.2% of the total, were blocked because a queue was full. The percentage of telephone calls blocked because a queue was full varied considerably during certain months in fiscal year 2013-14. From December 2013 through January 2014, when call volumes were significantly higher than in other months of the year, more than 80% of the calls to the telephone line for initial claims were blocked because the queue was full. In contrast, less than 10% of calls were blocked from February 2014 through June of 2014. At the time of our audit, DWD indicated it was taking steps to reduce the likelihood that large numbers of calls would be blocked in the future. For example, in November 2014, it implemented a new computer system to process initial claims online. DWD also indicated that it planned to task additional staff to help answer calls to the call centers. Individuals and employers can appeal DWD's unemployment benefits decisions, and appeals are filed first with DWD's administrative law judges and then can be further appealed to the Labor and Industry Review Commission. From fiscal year 2011-12 through fiscal year 2013-14, the appeals process upheld 64.9% of DWD's decisions. During that three-year period, the administrative law judges generally issued decisions faster than required by federal law. Individuals are sometimes paid more unemployment benefits than they are entitled to receive. From fiscal year 2011-12 through fiscal year 2013-14, DWD identified 681,400 overpayments totaling $167.9 million. This included 577,000 overpayments totaling $61.8 million that occurred because individuals unintentionally provided DWD with incorrect information. It also included 64,700 overpayments totaling $86.3 million that occurred because individuals intentionally provided DWD with incorrect information. It typically takes DWD years to fully recoup identified overpayments. The $42.3 million that DWD recouped in fiscal year 2013-14 included overpayments that DWD had identified over the prior 26 years. The Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council advises DWD on matters related to unemployment insurance. No later than March 15th of each year, DWD is statutorily required to report to the council on its efforts to detect and prosecute unemployment insurance fraud. We found that some information in DWD's March 2014 report could have been presented more clearly. The report indicated that in 2013, DWD identified $24.8 million in overpayments that resulted from intentional misrepresentations. The report further indicated that DWD recouped $24 million in overpayments that resulted from intentional misrepresentation, and that this equated to a 97.0% rate of recoupment. However, this percentage was overstated because almost all of the $24 million that DWD recouped in 2013 had been identified in prior years. DWD's data indicated that it actually recouped $2.3 million of the overpayments identified in 2013 as having resulted from intentional misrepresentations, and this equates to a 9.5% rate of recoupment. Our report identified two recommendations for DWD. And first, we recommended that DWD report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on the numbers of answered, blocked, and abandoned calls to its unemployment benefits call centers each month from November 2014 through February 2015. On March 13th of this year, DWD reported this information and indicated that no calls were blocked during this four-month period. Second, our report also recommended that DWD specify in its annual reports to the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council the years in which all recouped overpayments were identified, and we recommend that DWD provide a copy to the committee of its March 2015 report. Last month, DWD did provide the committee with a report, and that report indicated the number of, indicated the years in which the overpayments were first identified.
That concludes our summary of Report 1415. I'd like to add my thanks to Dean and to the team, which includes George and James, for their work on the project, and we'd be happy to respond to your questions at this time.
Okay, questions from committee members. Representative Sargent.
Thank you so much for your work, as always. I have a question about the individual fault unintentional, which seems like a pretty big number of folks. Was there any time spent, any discovery into what caused that much unintentional? It makes me feel like there's something flawed with the system if people are getting, that many people are being tripped up.
Representative, we did not look at that. It is a complex program, and as individuals are providing information sometimes on a weekly basis, they can inadvertently provide incorrect information.
Representative, I would direct your attention to page 30 of the audit effort. There are some additional dots there that do describe some of the context around the different kinds of circumstances in which particular kinds of errors may occur, but it's not on the basis of representing every potential outcome that would lead to that particular finding.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions from committee members? Co-Chair Kirkman.
Thank you. With the chart on page 31, the 577,000 relates to how many actual individuals? And you know I've asked that question before.
Yes. And Representative Kirkman, it's going to be in DWD's response to you where you'll find the number. It's
okay.
A footnote to the table that they've updated with new information, which I believe is on page 6 of their presentation.
Okay.
The lower box that's in that corner has a footnote that will describe that number.
I do, and I'm aware that the I think it is like 280-some thousand individuals, if I'm not mistaken, right, Dean? Or do you have that number?
About 223,000.
How many?
223,000.
223,000 because I just want folks to at that particular chart. That's claims. It's not individuals, and so it could be somebody who has a repeat. You know, unintentional. But with regards to the intentional fraud, which is also a large number and even a greater number of amount of dollars, it's $86 million of intentional fraud in the program over 3 years. That 64,000 claims equates to about 44,000 individuals who've committed that intentional fraud. And I know the senator and I have
64,000.
Correct. It's 64,000, mm-hmm. But it's 44,000 individuals.
Okay.
The senator and I are working on a bill draft currently, and we sent it out today for co-sponsorship to if you commit, it's kind of a 2 strikes and you're out of the program for 7 years to add a deterrent for those folks that intentionally fraud the system. So.
Okay. Senator Brousseau. Representative Brousseau. A lot of people think it's a downgrade, so I know John does. These guys down here. They want a unicameral body, no senators.
Ooh. 43,000 individuals. The question that I have is how do we find these errors? How do we? There, obviously, we know it's 43,000 individuals. What's the methodology for finding?
There's a few items that I think when you ask DWD the question, they'll point you to the appendices that they've included as part of the report to the UI Advisory Council. If you look at, for example, Appendix A of that document, it's on page 14, you'll see the detection methods that were used to identify particular kinds of findings of fraud and dollar amounts used. So that might be one of the answers to the question, Representative Brousseau, is the listing of circumstances that are there describing how they found it.
And we do have penalties now, I would assume.
Current law, as described at the bottom of page 6 in their follow-up document, again, where the numbers of individuals are being called out, the 44,000, footnote 2, DWD describes that current law provides for a 15% penalty on overpayments made as a result of an individual intentionally providing inaccurate information.
Thank you. Sorry.
Senator Bewley.
Thank you. I want to ask a question related to the person who either intentionally or unintentionally is in the process of repaying overpayments. And I want to think of it as if it was in a different industry, let's say banking or credit card industry, where you have debt that you're trying to repay. Do we have a way of looking at the kind of performance of people who are repaying these? And like you are making regular payments, although it might not be the amount you're supposed to be paying, but you're behaving well, and we would consider half of the outstanding cases are good. They're doing well. Do we ever come to a point where we write them off and they appear on the books as bad debt and then they go away? I mean, how do we look at this balance in terms of good performance on repayment and we're doing a good job of helping people make regular payments? I mean, how does that look, and is there a way to determine if DWD is doing a good job and if the people who owe money are doing a good job?
Senator, as part of our evaluation of the UI program and this particular issue, we didn't look at metrics around repayment in that manner. So I think I would defer the question to DWD, and they'll be able to tell you how they think of it from the individual repayment perspective.
Other questions from committee members? Representative Sargent.
Thank you. And maybe it's just that I haven't had enough coffee yet today, even though it's afternoon. I have a question about these folks that the intentional fraud folks, the 44,400 people or the 64,700 instances, we're defining them as intentional fraud, but is there an appeals process if DWD decides this was intentional, or maybe you decided it was intentional, however it was decided, is there a way that folks can go forward and appeal that decision? Is it possible that really there was confusion that was going on, and what is the percentage? Is that 64% that you mentioned in the slide earlier of the cases are standing, or is that 64% of something else?
Well, thank you for the question. Dean will speak to the appeals component of it. I wanted to just clarify that the characterization of intentional versus unintentional is not something we audited against. So these are DWD's representations of intentional and unintentional.
So we don't have clear definitions of what intentional or unintentional are.
We just didn't substitute our judgment to go back through the finding again and determine whether it was intentional or unintentional.
That seems important to me. Thank you.
Representative, yes, individuals can appeal all decisions made by DWD, first to those administrative law judges and then to the Labor and Industry Review Commission.
Is that the 64.9% of the decision
right,
benefits?
Yes.
So, in fact, 44,488 people were listed as intentional fraud people, but in fact 33% of them were not intentional. Or is that, can you help me clarify? Or
we did not look at how many of those individuals actually filed appeals. Some may, some probably did not,
but we don't have two out of three. That seems like not a great track record for DWD to have. You probably can't answer that question, but to me, that it feels that way. Thank you for clarifying that.
Co-Chair Kirkman?
Yes. This is something I've looked into in a little bit greater detail, but I do want to hear from the department on it. But I know in one of the cases, very rarely do they actually get to criminal prosecution to actually get that far. The number over the three-year period is very, very low that actually go to that level. But in the one case that was... that got to be that far, that she was actually working for the VA's office in Milwaukee and saying that she was on unemployment. She was unemployed at the same time. She frauded the system of $40,000, and she's currently paying us back at a rate of $12 per week while she's living in Minnesota, working for the Minnesota VA now, living in a 3,000 square foot. She was living in a 3,000 square foot townhome that rented for roughly $2,200 a month. So in the cases that are the more egregious cases where, you know, there is intentional fraud, she was working while collecting unemployment from us, going, you know, costing us $86 million in our unemployment system, there should be some further penalties and deterrence so people don't continue to get back on unemployment who shouldn't be on unemployment. So even if it's half that number and only 22,000 people, there are still a considerable amount of fraud in the program, I believe. And again, we didn't ask for the audit to look for this type of fraud. It just, and in your course of review, really, when you were initially going over this audit with me, that's what really struck out to me, was that there is a huge number of intentional fraud in this program that we hadn't seen before, and, you know, didn't really have concrete facts. And so that's why, you know, audits are good, I think, because, you know, sometimes we do them for a different reason, and it yields different outcomes or, you know, change in different ways.
Madam Co-Chair, for the benefit of the committee, I would direct your attention to page 8 of the department's follow-up report submitted to you in March. They do discuss updated information through 2014 about the number of cases referred for criminal prosecution and indicate that the number is 19.
That's still very small.
Other questions from committee members? If not, thank you both very much for another great audit. Secretary Reggie Newsom. Good afternoon, Reggie. I know you just love this committee, so. The more important things you do over there, the more you're going to get audited. Saying that lightheartedly, Reggie. Both the microphones on, it's first thing. They're both on. Good.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson Coles and Chairperson Karkman and other members of the committee. I'm happy to be here. I'm joined by Joe Hendrick, who's the Division Administrator of Unemployment Insurance, along with our Deputy Administrator, Ben Purse, and our legislative liaison, B.J. Dernbach. And we're here to provide response and follow-up to the report that we submitted to you all this past spring, a few weeks ago. And based on the report that you heard from the members of the Audit Bureau, I think there has been some significant progress made on the issues that were raised in the audit. In terms of black calls, I'm happy to report that nearly 700,000 calls have come in. And since last summer, we have not blocked any calls, and 99.5% of the calls are answered within 10 minutes or less. We continue not to have a backlog and not automated claims, as well as the percentage of individuals with our upgrades and our claim filing system for initial claims. I'm happy to report that nearly 90% of individuals that start are able to finish their claims online, which year to date, year over year, was a little over 50%. And we also made the changes based on the recommendations in the audit as it relates to reporting overpayments. And lastly, I want to mention in terms of waste, fraud, and abuse, the department takes these things very seriously. And that's why in the governor's budget, he's proposed increasing the penalty for individuals that are committed, proven to commit fraud, raising it to a felony stance, which is similar to other felonies that are committed. So that's a very significant step, as well as referrals for prosecution, criminal prosecution of intentional fraud. Just recently had a meeting with the Attorney General's office and Attorney General Schimmel, and we discussed a process to do this smartly. And as I mentioned during my testimony to Joint Finance Committee, that we want to do this smartly, that we do refer more cases to local district attorneys so we can continue to provide that as a deterrent, that we want to do it smartly so we don't overwhelm the system at the same time that we can continue to weed this type of thing out. And we're here. We're happy to respond to any questions that you may have.
Okay, questions from committee members. Representative Nygren.
Good afternoon. How's it going, gentlemen?
Excellent.
Good. The question that's been brought up a few times, the difference between intentional and unintentional, is there a standard? I mean, how do you identify the difference between the two? I think that's an important designation we need to have an understanding of.
Sure. It relies certainly a lot on human intelligence and experience at the department. So let me give you just an example. If somebody's doing their work search and they're reporting to us their work search efforts and they certify that they completed 4 work searches as required by law, but they just made it up. They didn't actually go out and do it. And then we determine that they just made it up and misreported that. That clearly is intentional. However, there are instances, and this partly explains why the number of unintentional is so much higher than intentional, but yet the dollar amount isn't necessarily as high. There's lots of very small dollar amounts of unintentional things. I'll give you an example. Somebody's collecting UI and they take some part-time work, so their UI benefit's going to be reduced. And then they have to report to us that part-time work. And so the person reports to us that they made $200 in a week because they got their paycheck and it was $200. But their gross wage they earned was $240, and then there were taxes taken out. And they thought they needed to report the net, whereas they were really supposed to report the gross. That's an example of an unintentional first time in the system. They weren't trying to defraud the state of Wisconsin anyway. That's an example of an unintentional, but yet you can see the dollar amount involved, you know, would be relatively small.
So you're speaking of the intentional side, you use the work search example. So, I mean, you're using human intelligence, in other words, conversations, follow-up with the people that are making the claims. Are there certain industry, unemployment industry, from state to state, common trainings or ways that are consistent from state to state to be able to help you identify this type of fraud? Or is this something that we're doing uniquely here in Wisconsin?
Well, all states face these challenges, and so we not only have training provided to us by the Department of Labor, but there's also a organization called NASWA, which is State Workforce Agencies, that provides seminars and training. So across the country, there is a certain level of uniform training.
Okay, do they have measurements and standards or tools for you to help identify?
The federal government actually has standards that they put on us, both in terms of quality as well as timeliness and the speed at which we have to get payments out. And if we don't meet those standards, particularly over amount of time, we face reductions in federal funding. So we have very strong motivation to meet those standards.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Brousseau.
Thank you. And I apologize if this is something I should... No, I'm relatively new to all the details of the program. Do we just have a one-size-fits-all as far as the job search? And the reason I ask that is there, you know, if you're in Madison, there may be four jobs to apply for, but if you are in a very rural part of Wisconsin, Florence County, for instance, there may not be four jobs to apply for. And if there's nothing in the area and you have to drive a considerable distance, you may or may not have a car. I mean, do we make any differentiation, or is it a one-size-fits-all, no matter where you live and what access you have to transportation?
Yeah. At risk of speaking unintelligibly about something, I can get you from our Bureau of Legal Affairs and from the assistance of the legislative team good information about how exactly the work search, how the laws are and exactly the requirements and things like that. Off the top of my head, I couldn't answer that without possibly misspeaking.
Because I think if somebody is falling into the category of fraud or intention, yet there are no jobs to apply for or they have no way to get to them, maybe they're doing this out of desperation. I mean, I'm trying to find, there's a human component here, and I'm trying to find out how the department deals with that, or do we just have a one-size-fits-all? So if I could get an answer to that, I'd be interested.
Representative, we'll get you some additional information. We just want to make sure we're clear on this, that there is an issue of the law which talks about the number of work searches, which is four. So claimants have to do four work searches versus the issue of what the regional labor market may have is available jobs and opportunities. So we'll get you information, but all claimants must do four work searches.
Well, that's the answer then. And that, to me, is problematic if we're going to put people in the box, in a box saying fraud, when it may be that they need to be in a box called desperation. If they are in an area where there's little to no job market and available jobs. So anyway, but that's not for today's discussion, but I do think it's something that we need to address at some point. Thank you.
Okay. Co-Chair Kirkman.
Thank you, Secretary and former Representative Hendrick, for being here today. For those that are new to the, Joe and I served together for, right? Or you'd moved on before I'd come.
We were staffers together at one point, let's just say that.
So it's nice to see you coming back to testify in your new role. So
again, I appreciate you, you're coming to testify today because this, we did this audit for the calls and the spike in calls and the drop calls, and I appreciate that we got to an answer on that and that this year we were able to, again, run the program smoothly when the, you know, spike of calls usually go up during, you know, starts around November, late November through the holiday season. I appreciate that we didn't have that dramatic jump in claimants. But in reading the audit, it really struck a chord with me was page 31, was the intentional fraud in the program. And again, I didn't ask for the audit because of that particular reason, but it really did just, because again, I want people that need and are eligible for these benefits to receive these benefits. And the case that I cited earlier where the woman who was already working and then still claiming $40,000 of UI benefits, it's taking money away from others that in the program. Do you have a breakdown of those 44,000 individuals over the 3 years of how much that $86 million over the 3 years? I know I'm looking at your chart that you've put together on page 8 of your document. It talks about 2011, 12, 13, and 14. But I'm looking for something, I guess, a little bit more specific on the $86 million because there are people that are repeating frauding the system. You know, and so I guess I'm trying to get to those 44,000 people. Like, what is the average amount that they're frauding the system?
I just want to make sure I understand. So we had identified out of the, out of the 64,000 intentional fraud that instances of 44,000 individuals, and then there's a dollar amount associated with the total. So what you're asking is for us to break to associate to the 44,488, the cumulative dollar amount?
Correct.
I think we should be able to get that.
Okay.
If we can aggregate it together, we should be able to break it back apart.
That would be helpful. Of those 44,000, obviously some people are doing it more than once. And again, do we know on average, is it one individual who's maybe doing it 10 times then? Or is it one individual doing it twice? You know, I guess I'm looking for a breakdown of that 44,000. How many times on
average? How many repeaters are there? How many treepeaters are there? Yeah, we can get you.
Okay.
That.
I think that'll be helpful as we go forward. That's what I have for right now, Senator.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Sargent.
Thank you, Chair Coles, and thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. One thing that I want us all to remember as we talk about this is that these are earned benefits. These are benefits that hardworking Wisconsinites have put into the system, and they have earned them. And we in Wisconsin have pretty poor job numbers, and we have a lot of people who are really struggling. And it's really hard for me to sit in a committee where we're assuming the worst in people. And yes, Representative Kirkman gives a very compelling story of a woman who made some very unfortunate decisions. And we need to make sure that that does not happen. But the demonizing that I feel is happening in this case is very, very concerning to me. And I hope that the mission and the conversations that happen with the people within your agency don't automatically assume the worst, and that maybe you're talking that way right now because of the outcomes of this audit, but these are earned benefits from our taxpayers, my neighbors, my family members, my friends, and me. And we can't demonize the people of our state in the way that this conversation is going. So I am hopeful that overwhelmingly you have a positive outlook of these folks and see the mission of your agency to get people out of a tough spot and on their feet and moving forward.
Sure. Our view is that the unemployment insurance program is a safety net program that's there for individuals that are dislocated from their job for no fault of their own. However, we believe that the employers that pay unemployment insurance tax into the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund that we have a responsibility to have and ensure program integrity of the fund, that individual claimants and payments made out to claimants, that the money goes for individuals that are eligible to receive these dollars. And, of course, to protect the public trust, we want to make sure that we have good controls and systems in place to protect employers that pay into the fund, employment insurance tax, that those dollars are going to the safety net. And our goal ultimately is to decrease the duration of time for individual claimants that receive unemployment insurance so we can get them retooled, reskilled, retrained, or connected back to other job opportunities regionally and other training programs like Wisconsin Fast Forward and other efforts are in place to decrease time on unemployment insurance for individual claimants. And again, going forward, we're going to continue to focus on that, have good, strong program integrity controls, continue to assist claimants that are there, that are dislocated from their job for no fault of their own, but decrease the time that they have to spend on unemployment insurance and continue to make sure that we create jobs and opportunities. And I'm really happy to report out, Representative, that the unemployment rate in the state at 4.8% is the lowest it's been since August of 2008. So we're certainly moving in the right direction, and we're going to continue to provide resources and support for Wisconsinites.
And in my chair, as the person charged with helping oversee the integrity of this program, when somebody commits UI fraud, they are not only, in essence, stealing from the employers who pay that money in, but they are also harming the other employees in the state of Wisconsin who need that system and who are not defrauding the system. So I think by focusing on fraud, trying to prevent it, trying to recoup it when it happens, and enforce the law, I think we are helping both employers and employees.
I have a follow-up question.
Sure.
Secretary mentioned the unemployment numbers, and I think oftentimes we talk about the unemployment numbers and we're not talking about the number of people that have fallen off the back end, that we're not counting anymore because they're not in your system, because they've lost all hope. And we have an awful lot of people in that case in Wisconsin. And if I had a way of having this conversation, I think we should be talking about the percentage of people that have jobs and the percentage of people that want jobs that don't have them. We should be talking straight talk.
Sure.
Yes, we can spin these numbers around. But my friends and neighbors they're hurting right now, and they're really frustrated with the help that they're not getting from our state as people. So I appreciate your party affiliation. I appreciate the fact that you've got your governor's back, but I've got my constituents back. And
sure,
we could go back and forth an awful lot here. But it's my job to advocate for what it is that I'm hearing in my office from the taxpayers and the people of my district.
Sure.
So I appreciate that.
Sure. I'm here as a humble public servant representative to serve the taxpayers of Wisconsin. I'm happy to report out in terms of our labor force participation rate, those individuals. National average. National average.
Our best. It's not perfect.
The biggest room is room for improvement, Senator. However, we're certainly moving in the right direction, and we have a positive story to tell.
Yep. Absolutely.
Pages discuss That's 300. If you look and that's and out it is tabbed.
We want to make sure. You're clear on your question.
Which would be
let's say got three.
Thank you.
$320. There's an assumption.
Number divided by the dollars, that is the average, yes.
That's
yes.
The average. Okay, so quite a few will be more, but a lot will also be are nice and clear. Job, you'd have to move. So I guess what I'm saying is it's not really a question as much as an observation that these are numbers. How bad we're
I just want to thank you for leadership in responding. But I pay on money away from folks. That actually and it's seems that you're very
there is
to prosecute these cases, so we prosecute all of them. That's why we're trying to recoup the overpayment administratively and use the tools that we have to recoup the overpayment. So it's a difference between the ones that are prosecuted. All of them are prosecuted.
So in the weeds.
Publicly disclose exactly what all that is, because I would then be telling the bad guys how to cheat the system. But there's we look for the larger dollar amounts, and there's a certain threshold.
$300.
thousands of cases. Might not have the same.
That some of us are justifying fraud. Yes, the particular example cited is egregious, and there is made on one outlier. So I think all of us, if we are truly policymakers and not politicians, slamming your colleagues and saying we're trying to justify fraud. Thank you.
Okay. Representative, did you want to comment on that, Reggie, or?
Using
first of all, I mean, I think I'm speaking right now. But there was a comment earlier about job searches. Sir, my qualification
by the department or another entity, it can include update of a resume, it can include actually searching for a job. It's a lot of different things. by that. State labor means Jobson was. In terms of
behind tab B, you'll this purple.
And wanting to know.
Other questions? Testifying on this.
Representative Coles and Chairperson Coles, Chairperson Kirkman, members of the committee, I'm here to talk a little bit of DWD. We consider our comes. Employers understand the most significant disabilities. DVR job seekers are reasonable and allowable under the federal and state laws. And as you can see in our performance indicators, that we meet and exceed all the federal standards provided to us by the Department of Education and the Rehabilitation Service Administration. And again, in terms of your last scope statement, in terms of positive outcomes, you can see from federal fiscal year 11 through federal fiscal year 14, we've increased successful employment outcomes. In federal fiscal 11, we had 2,972 individuals receive a positive outcome, and now it's 4,415 the last federal fiscal year. And you can see on the bottom, the annual earnings of these individuals went from $50 million in federal fiscal year 11 to $78.3 million in federal fiscal year 14. And again, we take waste, fraud, and abuse very seriously at Department of Workforce Development, and we're happy to investigate. We want to know about these type of things. If there's issues, irregularities, we want to look, we want to know about them. We investigate them very thoroughly. And we have a very comprehensive system of controls and separation of our fiscal payments and our policy and processes in terms of being able to address and mitigate and minimize any fraud. So again, I want to thank you, Chairperson Coles and Chairperson Cookman, for the opportunity to talk about this, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions for the Secretary and his staff? I guess they're just wowed by your presentation, Reggie. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here. We anticipate this would be a smaller audit. You know, we look at like a month or two, or medium audit, 3 or 4 months, or King Kong giant audit, 6-7 months or more. We anticipate this is on the smaller end. Senator Buley.
Do you want to hit your button?
Janet, your button.
I turned it off and then I turned it on. You've been in the North quite a bit, and I appreciate the time that you spend there. And as much as we have an opportunity here, and I just want to make sure that our scope includes everything that you would want to see covered. And I know that we are hearing that there are differences around the state. And do you feel, or can you comment on the system of offering your services throughout the state? Do you feel that, do you like the approach that it's pretty much the same kind of, the offices are pretty much duplicates of each other? And I'm not saying that in a pejorative sense by any means, but we do have different climates, different cultural climates, different scope of needs. An amount of services, say, for mental health in one area of the state is going to be very different in another part of the state. We're not a consistent state from border to border. Do you feel that your delivery system is suited to match the very differences in unemployment culture or disability culture, if you will, throughout the state?
I think so, but I'll allow our Minister Greco to talk.
Right. Now, I really appreciate the question. We are very much into statewideness in terms of service capacity. And so what we do is we have counselors and staff assigned based on population, state population. We are also in 42 locations throughout the state. Accessibility for persons with disabilities is very, very critical to us. So we have staff in a variety of areas so that we can impact with rural populations as well as urban populations. We have a program that identifies services specifically to the individual. So the individual circumstances drive the service level. And we look at resources within that area, and those resources we develop, we work with those resources for all the populations that we serve. So if there is a preponderance of individuals with certain disability groups, we want to make sure that we've got the resources to support those resources. You mentioned persons with mental illness. We're doing some very, very innovative things right now with services to that population in a variety of areas of the state. And we all benefit from that in terms of successful practices that we want to replicate in those areas as well. So that's how we grow that expertise across the state. We want to have individuals have a quality service no matter where they live in the state. John, any additional comments you'd like to make?
Okay, other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else interested in testifying on this potential audit of the DBR? If not, we're going to move on to the next audit idea, proposed audit of the issuance of wastewater permits. Chief Auditor Joel Christman, once again. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, this is behind tab A in your packet. This is the proposed scope for the audit of certain types of permits issued through the Wisconsin Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. We've outlined just a little bit of background information on the front side of the scope, talking about that particular permitting system, which issues both individual and general permits. As you see on page 2, the framework of what we would propose to do in what would be a larger audit effort here would be to examine the issuance of individual WPDS permits to three general categories: municipal facilities, industrial facilities, and large farms. And in doing so, analyze DWD's performance with respect to timeliness, the overall process, revenues, expenditures, and staffing for that process, compliance with statutory administrative rules, and then also on the permit holders themselves, compliance with particular permit requirements, and then the consistency and appropriateness of DNR's enforcement actions in these areas. I'm joined by the Deputy State Auditor, Paul Stieber, who would direct this audit effort if your decision today is to move it forward. So with that, we'd be happy to respond to your questions.
Questions from committee members? I'd just like to say this was my idea, not any one particular thing, because I've had a long-time interest in water quality, and to the best of our knowledge, there hasn't been an audit done of this, maybe ever. And I thought it's time to look at it. And so you anticipate this would be a medium-sized audit.
Actually, Senator, I would describe this as a larger audit effort.
This would be more of a larger one. So we'll really, you know, maybe get some great ideas to fix a couple problems long-term. I mean, that's the way I look at this. I'm hoping that the audit points us in the directions to help us solve a few dicey issues out there. So no other questions? Representative Mocco.
I just have a comment, not so much a question, but I'm looking forward to this, and I hope that we proceed with this particular audit. It's interesting, the speaker said yesterday down in his district, they don't really have a lot of DNR issues. But in our area, we have quite a few. And the senator and I share a similar district, and just across the river from each other, and it's a big deal. And so I just want to compliment leadership for putting it forward, as well as the administration for being very narrow and precise in its scope. And I think I'm excited to see what happens. I, too, I'm a boater. My district is bordered by the Fox River and Green Bay. So I have a vested interest in making sure that we have water quality. But I also have agriculture is a huge part of our area. And I just think that water is a strategic advantage for the state of Wisconsin, and we got to make sure that we're handling it in a quality, efficient way, and that includes the permitting process. So I'm very excited and looking forward to it, and I just want to thank the leadership for putting it together.
Yeah. Thank you for your comments, Representative Mocco. Any other comments on this audit? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Is there anyone interested in testifying on this proposed audit? If not, we're going to move on to the next audit idea, and we will be exacting on all of these after we finish this. So, Joe, I guess, you know, you're just up and down, you know, you're getting your work out. I thought there might be somebody testifying, so sorry about that. So now we're looking at the finale of the GAB government accountability audit that was not able to be completed because of the Attorney General's ruling this summer that blocked that piece of it. So take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For committee members, this is behind tab C in your packet. So as you look at this particular scope, the co-chair has framed exactly the component that defines why you're here again to look at the issue. Since the new session began, of course, we released report 1414 at the end of the last calendar year in December. The Government Accountability Board has a follow-up recommended from us to you, the committee, that will be delivered to you, I expect, next Wednesday. April 15 was the recommended day for that submission on the body of those recommendations from Report 1414. But you recall during our testimony when we had the public hearing and in the report itself, we did identify a scope limitation that resulted from that Attorney General's opinion. And so without the ability to access all of those records, our scope of comment on all aspects of GAB's operation was limited. And so on that basis, you, the committee, earlier this session put forward legislation that worked to clarify and reaffirm the Audit Bureau's access to records that was eventually signed into Act 2 and became effective in March. And so as we describe on page 2 of the scope memorandum, what we would propose to do and what I would say is a small audit effort is to complete this work that we would have originally envisioned being part of that 1414 piece. So this would be complaints and concerns that GAB has received in recent years, including how they are considered and investigated, the use of special investigators hired by GAB, and then also information that would be discussed about those particular circumstances in closed meetings of the GAB itself. So with that statutory change, we're assured on the access side that the concerns that led to the scope limitation won't be present as we move forward. So unless there's particular things that you'd like me to speak to about the GAB audit, that would define the scope of our effort. And Director Swenson is here to join me to respond.
Okay, questions for our auditors. Anybody have any questions? Co-Chair Kirkman.
I just want to say thank you so much. I think this really will complete the work that you've already done on the GAB audit. And I think the discussion that we had at the hearing really led a path to just finishing this so that we can complete our policy conversation as we go forward, too. So thank you.
Other questions from committee members? I wanted to stay put and say, in case somebody has a question as we go through the executive session.
And Mr. Chair, would you anticipate hearing from Director Kennedy at this point?
He's got a slip, but it's over there. He has it over there. I don't think so.
Did you want to testify? I don't have your hearing slip. Okay. So, okay, thanks, Jill. Okay. Director Kennedy, sorry about that. Plowing through a lot of stuff here. Thanks for being here.
My apologies, I didn't fill out the form and get it to you. And really, I was just here for information in case you had questions to point out, the state auditor did, that the audit committee report had recommended we submit a report to you. The Government Accountability Board is meeting on Friday to review the draft report. If you're interested in a preliminary peek, you can see that it's on our website. Our response to the audit committee's report, the Audit Bureau's report, has been very transparent throughout this, and the board will be meeting publicly to review our draft report. We do address a lot of the issues related to how the GAB handles complaints and information in that report. Now that we are permitted to share that information with the Legislative Audit Bureau, we certainly were looking forward to sharing that. You know, it was with an abundance of caution that I sought legal advice before putting the board and its staff at risk because of the penalties associated with that. We've always from the outset maintained that we wanted to have the Audit Bureau standing in our shoes, able to evaluate that, because I think any good government administrator looks at the audit as an opportunity to improve its performance, assess things from an unbiased manner, and we're certainly prepared to move forward in this area.
Okay, very good. Any questions for Mr. Kennedy?
I do have one question, and that is simply the
question for yourself.
I have a question for you, though. I question myself every day.
I do, too.
and that simply is that the scope did not define a time period, and I didn't want to presume that it would be the same as the audit period. And I talked with the state auditor about that. So I wasn't quite sure what period of time you were looking at, whether you would stay with the original time period, which was July 1st of 2010 through June. It did get extended till June 30th of last year, if that's the period you were concerned about, but that wasn't in the proposed scope, and so I wanted to make sure that, you know, the Audit Bureau and we were prepared to, you know, focus on whatever area that the committee was interested in.
I don't believe I have an answer for you right now.
Okay.
So, other questions or comments for Mr. Kennedy? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else interested in testifying on this audit? Okay. We're going to just go into a recess, waiting for Representative Nygren, and Senator Darling is back.
Yes,
and Senator Vinehout. So we're just going to wait a couple minutes for them. Mary, are you still on the phone?
I'm still here, Rob.
So you're here, Mary? Yes. Okay, Mary. Good.
I'm here.
Senator Vinehout coming momentarily. Okay, the first audit I'd like to vote on would be the DVR audit. The chair would move approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Co-Chair Kirkman. Clerk will call a roll.
Senator Coles.
Aye.
Representative Kirkman.
Aye.
Senator Darling.
Aye.
Senator Lozick.
Mary.
Senator Vine.
Okay.
Senator Vinehout. Senator Bewley.
Aye.
Representative Mako.
Aye.
Representative Nygren.
Aye.
Representative Sargent. Aye. Representative Brousseau.
Okay, Senator Vinehout will be able to vote after we leave. We'll stay in recess, and then she could vote whenever she gets here. The second audit I'd like to take up would be the waste discharge system. The chair would move approval of this audit. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Representative Mako. Clerk will call a roll.
Senator Coles.
Aye.
Representative Kirkman.
Aye.
Senator Darling.
Aye.
Senator Lozick.
Aye.
Senator Vinehout. Senator Bewley.
Aye.
Representative Mako.
Aye.
Representative Nygren.
Aye.
Representative Sargent.
Aye.
Representative Brousseau.
Okay. And the final one would be the Government Accountability Board and the finale that we weren't able to finish up before. So the chair would move approval of this audit. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Senator Lozick. Thank you, Mary. Clerk will call a roll.
Senator Coles.
Aye.
Representative Kirkman.
Aye.
Senator Darling. Senator Lozick.
Aye.
Senator Vinehout. Senator Bewley.
Aye.
Representative Mako.
Aye.
Representative Nygren.
Aye.
Representative Sargent.
Aye.
Representative Brousseau.
Okay, thank you all, and we will be in recess waiting for Kathleen. But you can all leave. Thank you very much. Somebody's got to wait.